The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It's Tuesday, March 31st, the year 2020. March has now been going on for 333 years. I don't know if anybody realized that. March will not end. It's the longest month in the history of mankind. To join me to talk about why March has been so long and other stuff, Brady Quinn Football Show!
And you know why March is the longest month?
What is that?
Because it's madness. It's March. Well, not this year. Unfortunately, not this year. So
yeah, no, kind of, yeah. This is the final. You're listening to this on the final day of March. I'm not like just because of this Corona situation. It does feel like the month has dragged on a touch. There haven't been sports in several weeks. Times are tenuous. Weird times, unprecedented times. Things are changing in the world. You know what else changed? They added Google Podcast. This is how crazy the world is right now. They added Google Podcast to the Apple operating system. Cats and dogs, Brady, sleeping in the same bed, 6 feet apart, but in the same bed. And you can find the Pick Six Podcast on Google Podcast, available on iOS. It means everybody, not just John Breach with his little Android. Yes, that's right. John Breach, green texter. Noted green texter, John Breach. I have a green texter in my close circle at work, my close circle of my non-work friends, my real-life friends, and a green my own brother, my only brother, the Charlie Brinson, who I grew up with, I've known my entire life. He is a green texter as well. I just can't get away from him. Drives me nuts. But you know what? Now you too can listen to Google stuff on your iPhone.
Which I'm really excited about. I'm happy about. However, we do all judge the green text that comes in. Do we not?
Yeah. It's just. Yeah. Oh, no. We hate the green text.
On an airplane, I can't text you. It doesn't work that way. Like, I've got to email you. That's a whole other issue.
If I want to send a GIF, a funny little image or something like that. Yeah, it takes 4.5 hours to upload. We do it with a blue text, seconds.
Yeah. I'm not down with the green, down with the blue.
So. I dislike the idea that we should all just be beholden to Apple. But look, I mean, I don't need a green texter in every aspect of my life.
Good point. But you know, look, sometimes you never know what you didn't need. Until you get something, you're like, I didn't even know it existed before. Like, hashtag Tiger King. Like, I didn't know I needed to watch all 7 episodes of Tiger King until I watched it. And then I was absolutely fascinated by the people that exist in this country who are obsessed with tigers and other exotic animals and who are also willing to get a tattoo that says property of Joe Exotic on their body.
Who amongst us isn't? Property of Joe Exotic at this point. I'm only 2 episodes in, but I'm excited to sit down in a congenial fashion with my lovely wife and watch the remaining episodes.
You know what's fascinating about it? Because this is the only thing I'll say in that regard, because I don't want to give away too much, even though I think you understand where this whole show is going and what it's about, is it gets weirder and weirder and weirder with pretty much each episode up until episode 6. And then it kind of like is what it is. And the ending's not great, but I also don't feel like the this story is done, if that makes sense.
Mm. I would agree with that as well. There's more to this story, as some people like to say. We're going to talk some NFL in general. I'm a little frazzled today. Apologies. Talk some free agents and maybe some Jameis Winston, Cam Newton. Look at the remaining free agents. But I do want to ask you, Brady, yesterday on CBS Sports HQ, we did a three-hour. And by the way, Brady Quinn, that's how you know he's a good friend, good sport. Sat at a desk and was on television, you know, the internet, the CBS Sports HQ, our 24/7 streaming sports network, doing this, our mock draft show for 3 hours. And then, you know what? Friend, a consummate professional, he hops into the podcast studio and fires up this bad boy with me after I made him wait for 15 minutes because of a domestic situation that was unfolding here in Raleigh. And
this is like Joe Exotic trying to kill Carol Baskin. Okay? let's not get that far.
But I'm curious what you thought about my selection of Tua Tagovailoa at number 2 overall.
Should we pull back the curtain? Should we get real about how this all came about?
Yeah, absolutely. I said it on the show. I mentioned it on yesterday's podcast too. I told him that I was taking Tua.
Right, but this is really the origin of you taking Tua. Okay, you don't want to admit it, but this is really the origin. So originally in this mock draft, as we set it up to prepare for this with like 40,000 people who are involved in the mock draft, I was supposed to select for the Dolphins, and they have the number 5 pick. Well, we had set up a conference call. I couldn't make the conference call. And so because of that, I couldn't be a part of that draft that was going to be on that conference call. Well, before that conference call took place, I went along like any good GM would do, and I started figuring out what the market was. So I called the Washington Redskins at number 2, who was picked by Will Brinson. I called the number 3 pick. I can't recall who had that spot. With Brian McFadden, excuse me. He had the number 3 pick. And I called Pete Prisco, the number 4, because I wanted to see what the market was.
Sure.
The Chargers were going to trade up ahead of me, what it was for there or what I needed to do to move up if that was the case. So talked to McFadden, talked to Prisco. Both really weren't sure what I was doing because I just happened to say to them, hey, what would it take for me to move up to take you? I'm the Dolphins at 5. And so I basically, what I was doing, my negotiation strategy was let them make the market, see if they're willing to actually use the NFL draft chart to look at the value, or see if they're going to set up something like that's like unprecedented, ridiculous, right? So neither really caught on to the strategy of what I was doing. And then there's Will Brinson. Will Brinson says he wants 2 ones. In fact, he even admitted that he wanted to drain me of all my first round picks this year as the Dolphins, all 3.
Correct.
In order to move up to number 2 and only take the quarterback at that spot. But he ended up saying that he would give up that number 2 spot, move back to 5 for that, the 5 pick, another first round pick, although we didn't get down to details, as well as I believe a second round pick. So 2 ones and a second round pick.
Correct.
To move up from 5 to 2, which is just absolutely asinine. So I was never going to make that move. If you wanted to draft Tua Tagovailoa out of spite, I would then wait until after the draft, after signing Jameis Winston or Cam Newton, which I would have done and announced that during the draft. I would have then looked to make potentially a trade with you for Tua or Dwayne Haskins, knowing that you had no leverage at that point and you had 2 first round picks the past 2 years on your roster and would be at best able to deal away one of them probably for a second round pick like Josh Rosen was dealt to the Miami Dolphins last year.
No way. I get 2 first for Tua.
No, you think that, but with not knowing the hip injury and maybe your medical staff has a different feel on it, not having an offseason to prepare him for a rookie year and all that, there's a lot of moving parts. So anyways, that was the behind the scenes of all of it. Nevertheless,
but then the
spite is what you said.
No, but then to follow up what happened, you were pulled out of the mock draft pool of the ownership pool and moved to the guy in charge of grading people. You wanted to see what happened. You didn't want to do, don't worry about why, but Ryan Wilson took over the Dolphins. We get on a conference call on Friday morning and I opened up the conference call by saying, hey, Wilson, make me literally any offer for the 2nd overall pick and I will trade you for the 5th overall pick. Just give me 5 and 26 and I'll do the deal. Wilson goes, no chance. I was like, if you don't do that, I'm going to spite take Tua at 2. I just need you to know that. I will wreck this draft and take to it, too, if you don't make some kind of deal for me, because there's a deal to be made. I'm that petty. And he was like, go ahead then. And so I took Tua.
Right, which I will say in your defense, it did make the draft really interesting, because at that point, now everyone's scrambling because they were saying to themselves, like, what am I going to do if I'm Detroit? I didn't think Chase Young would be here. Now I want to kind of stay put and take him. You also wonder if maybe some teams, you know, wanted to trade up to take Justin Herbert, if they were concerned about a team that they didn't realize, or like the Dolphins, for example, would be looking at, you know, Justin Herbert or Jordan Love. So it did provide some intrigue to the draft, mixing it up, even though I gave it a terrible grade because you now put yourself in a compromised position, and you could have gotten potentially, you know, a future Hall of Famer in Chase Young as a defensive end. It made things interesting. So we'll just leave it at that. If you haven't watched, please go watch. It is highly fascinating. And then Will Brinson just getting pummeled by even Scott Pioli throughout the course of the draft was entertaining enough.
Yeah, Scott Pioli suggested that they should do some recreational drug testing down at the Washington, D.C. office.
Started too late, right? Bruce Allen's already out of there. So that's
– yeah. Whoa. No, I'm with you there. All right, moving along to other stuff. What would you be doing if you were Brady Quinn, like, quarterback on depth chart right now instead of Brady Quinn, full-time dad / football analyst?
I would be working out probably nonstop, watching a lot of film at home, trying to find spaces. Honestly, like, what I would do, because the facilities are shut down, I would be trying to find a private indoor space that I could talk to the owner, I could get some field time, and I could try to work with a wide receiver or potentially a number of wide receivers, not too big of a group, to be respectful of the coronavirus and not spreading it. But I would find a private location, a spot where we could do that, film that, be able to review it for any technical stuff I was looking to do, go back, watch some film, potentially with those players or by myself. And I'd probably be keeping in constant contact with my coach, you know, looking at installs, things we're tweaking, things like that, and preparing myself for the season. So it's funny. It's kind of like the year we were locked out. The only difference is we wouldn't be able to do what we did from a group training standpoint because of the limits on that and the shelter or the stay-at-home order that's been placed. But honestly, there wouldn't be a whole lot of difference. And I was saying to you before this, like, I was at the Cleveland Browns back when we were concerned about MRSA. So, like, I remember being – like in a facility where guy after guy came back, you know, with MRSA, whether it was Joe Gervicius or Braylon Edwards, or I think Gary Baxter even had it at some point, like Charles Bentley. There were so many guys, Will, like it was concerning as a player. You're concerned about having surgery there in Cleveland. You're concerned about rehabbing there in Cleveland. It became like a big time concern. I can only imagine, by the way, how that would have been handled by the media if it was in today's like media with social media, et cetera. Because this is back in like 07, 09, right?
Or 07. Yeah, I mean, even the Buccaneers, when they had the MRSA situation with Greg Schiano, and that was a little bit different because it was, you know, Schiano was really under fire for a bunch of other stuff anyway, so people were able to use people were more than willing to use the MRSA thing to sort of pile on. But yeah, I mean, like, it does feel when it's something that's sort of contained to at least one locker room. And I mean, no offense, Brady, but like, you know, involved with a team that is, you know, not very successful on the field, that it almost felt, I at least as I recollect it, it almost feels like it's more of like a, well, there's another thing the Browns did wrong or something like that.
No, but I'm just saying, just from like, just from where teams are now and like what their protocols were in place and how they handled it. I mean, look, this is what came from all that. The Cleveland Clinic, which is one of the most renowned hospitals in the world, they actually built a separate orthopedic center where they started having surgery from. They completely redid our indoor facility. Now the actual field itself was cleaned, sterilized. You weren't allowed in there during the course of the offseason, but between 08, 09, they completely redid the weight room, the training room, the locker rooms, the lounge, like the meeting rooms, everything. Everywhere where it was possible, there could have been the potential of that. They redid all of it. And so, you know, there was a period of time where we couldn't even go in there, even in the off seasons. And we were operating at that time under a different CBA. So there weren't quite as many restrictions. Like, you had quarterback school. You had all those sorts of things that you could, you know, you could be a part of in the off season where you were there more. So one, like, know this for fans out there, like, there are different things that have been in place that players and coaches have had to deal with in the past where they kind of understand how to, you know, handle all this. It's really the draft prospects and those guys that didn't work out at the combine or didn't have a pro day or have injuries. those guys are the ones that are most impacted, obviously, by all of this and just trying to, you know, put their best foot forward, for, you know, all the talent evaluators.
I think too, like, at least in terms of the coverage and in the way that something like MRSA is handled and treated by the public and versus like a corona is like MRSA feels, you know, when you start to read about it, it's like a, you know, it's a bacteria. It feels more like like they're dirty, you know, and like they're dirty. It's only caused by contact. Whereas like the corona situation, it feels very much more like an invisible boogeyman type of situation. Does that make sense? Like it's sort of, it's lingering. It's really, really contagious. Like it can spread like crazy. Whereas MRSA, very contagious, but not going to be spread outside maybe of the Browns locker room if it's semi-contained.
Right. Well, yeah, you hope it is, but again, it's more contagious. It's more lethal. I mean, usually if you're having a big issue with MRSA, you know, you could lose limbs, you can lose body parts. I mean, the mortality rate on that is much more serious. And so that's the only thing I was kind of pointing to is like this kind of stuff. I mean, think about it. I'm not making the comparison to the flu, but when you think about an NFL team and during the season going through, flu season, you know, you're getting vaccinations, but there's times when guys walk in and they're sick and they say, turn around, go back home. And they quarantine them, if you will, until they feel better and they make sure that they get the right medicine that they need or whatever they need at that point. But, you know, they don't want to bring in the facility to ensure that, you know, they're not getting other players sick or coaches sick. Like, that's a real thing. It happens every NFL season during flu season. And so, again, players and coaches and people, they battle this every year to a degree with the flu. The difference with this thing is obviously that we just don't know enough about it, right? It's new. Everyone's scared because we're trying to understand the data and the information that we're getting, and we don't know if it's more lethal or maybe it's the same as the flu. We don't know if it's more contagious or maybe it's the same. Like, we don't really know what we don't know yet, and that's, I think, the scary thing. Yep. as we kind of, you know, venture on into this. But like I said before, I mean, you obviously have to take every precaution you can, you know, just with how you go about handling it. And that's where I think, again, for the draft prospects, when I talk to agents and I talk to guys who are representing these guys, they're like, yeah, dude, we're sending TRX, these TRX, you know, equipment to help these guys train because they can't train at their training facilities. They can't prepare for a pro day. They can't, you know, they're not supposed to be outside. There's no fields open. Like, these guys aren't able to do the things they need to do to prepare for their rookie season. And so those are the guys who are most impacted, not only by like the workout standpoint, but, you know, even in looking like the talent evaluators, they have the combine medicals. They have so much tape. They have those workouts.
Yeah. I don't buy the idea that these guys like can't get ready for the draft. It's like, you could do the draft right now if you needed to. Like,
no doubt.
Like, if you're not ready for the draft, then that's on you. It's been April 23rd the entire time. Like, get out there and make some picks. I agree. And like, I will be curious to see if the NFL too. And by the way, look, you know, this is a scary time in the world. Let's all do our part and be respectful. And, you know,
Right. No one visiting your home. That shouldn't be.
Hypothetically,
I think there's more pressure put on the scouts for the late round guys, right? Like the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round guys or free agents that, you know, weren't at the combine, right? They probably were basing everything off their pro day. They have to base off, dude, like what this D3 school, right? But maybe the kid went to Mount Union. Like, what did he do this year? What do you see on film? You're basing it essentially off the scout. And think about the two teams in the Rams and the Broncos who didn't send their coaching staffs to the combine. Like, I wonder if they're now thinking back on that, like, well, would it be nice to spend some time at the train station or just casually with a prospect since now we don't get those visits or we can't go out there to work them out, right?
Yeah, that backfired pretty badly, although it means that those coaching staffs were not traveling around the traveling in highly concentrated airports and everywhere else in late February. So they got that going for them.
Yeah, right. But, you know, again, like, supposedly we think the coronavirus just got here. I mean, my theory is it's probably been here a while. Like,
it was probably in Miami for the Super Bowl.
Dude, it's probably been here since November. Like, let's be honest. If that's when China first found out about it, like, that, as fast as things spread, as much as this world's connected, like, it's probably been here for a while. We just weren't aware of it. I mean, I'll just full disclosure, I have a friend. Their child is now 6 months old, got sick back in January. They had a respiratory infection. They got tested. At that time, they had COVID-19. And this is back in January. So I know that
they found out they had it.
Yeah. And the baby had to stay in the hospital, was quarantined for a little bit. Perfectly fine. Ended up being on a nebulizer for a while, but after that, you know, everything was fine, perfectly fine. No one in the family ended up having anything from that. They kind of did their part to stay away, but you know, that was, you know, over what, 2 months ago.
Yeah. It's crazy. All right, let's move on and talk about some NFL stuff. The,
Cam Newton. Yeah, there you go.
Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
Two former number one overall picks taken in the last less than 10 years, both free agents. Do you think this is, I mean, it is sort of related to Corona. Like, I think Cam's, the inability to do a physical is making it difficult for teams to potentially sign Cam Newton. Why is Jameis Winston is a former Heisman Trophy winning number one overall pick who led the league in passing yards last year and is still in his athletic prime. How is there no market for this guy, Brady?
Yeah, I think it just tends to be a year where one, you have a, you know, potentially two really, really incredible prospects in Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, depending on how you look at Tua's medical. So that takes away two teams that are eyeing those two guys, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at just the fact that Tom Brady and Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, you think of like guys of what they've done in this league in comparison to Jameis, like as much as there's upside there, I mean, shoot, the Bucs are case in point. Like they're looking at Jameis, they're looking at Tom Brady thinking, I think I'd rather try to win now these next 2 years than, you know, move on with this experiment, with Jameis Winston. And look, I don't blame them for it. Again, it's Tom Brady. You know, that's a guy that you, again, every team should have had the conversation about potentially drafting him or signing him, regardless of who your quarterback is, because it is the greatest of all time. You should at least have that conversation. Yeah. I would say it'll probably be more of the common thread with quarterbacks that are now taken in the first round of drafts, even if it's number one overall, where they rush them to play probably before they're ready. And by, you know, year three or four, like they've got to make that decision on them, right? And yeah. It's hard because for Jameis, I think his biggest flaw was the fact that he never improved upon the one thing that everyone got on him about on the field coming out of college, interceptions, being a bad decision maker. Now, if I was to tell you this, the most turnover-worthy plays in a single season since 2006 belong to these three quarterbacks, Jameis Winston, Carson Palmer, Andrew Luck, what would you say is the one thing those three guys had in common in all three of those years?
Kangol hat, named Bruce Arians as their coach.
That is correct. It was the first year that each one of those quarterbacks was in Bruce Arians' system, their first year.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that's actually, like, an interesting stat and, like, perspective. And granted, that comes from PFF only because
– I saw him tweet it earlier. That's how I knew the answer to.
I'm surprised you didn't retweet it.
I thought I did.
Did you?
I'm trying to ease up off Twitter. Trying not to be on Twitter 24/7.
I actually deleted Twitter from my phone altogether.
Good for you.
Yeah. I'm taking a sabbatical, much like Will Brinson did. You showed me the way, and I'm trying to follow in your footsteps.
Well, I think the key is, and not to go off on a bizarre tangent about it, but like the thing that I figured out for these apps and stuff is like, if you get into the habit of using like my default, when I'm like, if I don't have something going on my phone, like I get a free second, I will, you know, I have my phone, I'll just open it and just my default finger movement is to the Twitter app. And then I just scroll crap meaninglessly. It makes you a crazy person. It's bad for your health. There's much better thing, mental health. There's much better things you could be doing. And so if you get that app out of your life, it makes things easier.
I am with you, man. I am with you. I actually have enjoyed life more. I've stayed off my phone more. And I know this is a time where, you know, you can be forced to do it more because people are quarantined. They're staying at home. Or you can, you know, focus on your family and friends or whoever else and getting in touch with them. Or for me, like spending more time with my family. But that's been the route I've chosen instead. And it's actually been glorious. It's been a lot more fun to hang out with the kids and the fam instead of looking at Twitter. But anyway, going back to just kind of the Jameis Winston conversation, I think it has to do more about like the laws of supply and demand this year. I don't know that any other year, like it would work out quite the same way. And so I think it has more to do with that. For Cam Newton, I would actually argue this. I think if I was in his shoes, I'll put out whatever pump up videos I want, showcase I'm healthy, whatever. I don't care. I don't want to sign with the team right now. I want the draft to come and go. And I want to then have a clear vision of what teams realistically would be willing to bring me in and sign me to a contract that allows me to compete. So whether that's the Las Vegas Raiders, whether that's maybe New England, whether that's any other team, whether it's Miami or looking out west at the LA Chargers, like whatever team, like I would rather wait until I can see a clear picture of what's the situation. Because if I'm Cam Newton, I'm a former league MVP. I'm all for the videos, by the way. I'm 100% buying into his hype videos and everything else. And I'm watching him throw and move and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, he looks pretty darn healthy to me, man. Like, I think he looks pretty good. Like, I kind of like this Cam Newton with a chip on his shoulder, like, trying to look for that next opportunity. So if I'm him, I would rather wait for more clarity with what the situation I'm entering into is, because I don't look at him as a happy backup. And that's why I would not want to see him go somewhere where they're going to view him as being a bridge quarterback, if you will.
I think the thing with Cam, and I think that's a great point, to me, you don't want to end up, I don't want to compare Cam Newton to Mike Glennon. That's the, you know, I love Mike, he's my boy, but you know, that's unfair to Cam Newton. Cam Newton's obviously a much more successful player. And, but I think that the thing you would be worried about, and I think this is sort of what you're getting at, Brady, is like Mike Glennon signed a big free agent contract with the Bears, and he thought he was going to play in Chicago, and then Ryan Pace, who paid him that money, you know, sort of dogged him and took Mitchell Trubisky. And so, like, you don't, if you're Cam, you don't want to sign with the Chargers, then have them trade up and draft Justin Herbert or Tua, and all of a sudden, you know, they're like, well, we're 1-4. Sorry, Cam, we're going to see what Tua's got, or we're going to see what Herbert's got.
Right. And you know, case in point, and this wasn't exactly how it worked out, but like Nick Foles, widely regarded as one of the best locker room guys. He's a nice guy. You know, it had a tremendous role in Philly, being the starter and backup. But then he goes to Jacksonville, signs this big deal. And I can promise you this. This is what I know. This is an opinion. You know, he was excited about the opportunity. He thought he was going to be the guy. And again, it's not that they traded up and took, you know, Gardner Minshew where they did. They got him in the sixth round. But because of the injury and then how things worked out for Gardner, where he got in there, lit the world on fire, became the guy, there's all this momentum. Even when that started to fizzle out and Nick got back in there, it didn't really work out. Like, that team was a different team at that point in time. It was probably better suited for Gardner. So he got relegated back to that backup role again. And I can promise you this. People are like, well, he was getting paid a lot of money, so he doesn't care. Look, he cared. He went there with the expectation of playing and starting. I'm sure him going to Chicago has now more than ever to do with him knowing Nagy's system, him being with Bill Lazor, and him looking at that saying, this is a sneaky, really good opportunity for me, because they actually have some pieces out around the quarterback spot where, like Tannehill, maybe I can be that Tannehill, you know, for the Bears this year. Trubisky goes in, plays poorly. I replace him after, you know, 5 or 6 games, and we ended up all of a sudden being a playoff team because of my play. Like, I think that's his mindset to it. Like, I don't think he's going there just trying to be a good guy. And again, just going back to the Cam Newton conversation, or even Jameis Winston, I can't see either one of those guys, given what they've done and given, you know, where they were selected, I can't see either one being the type to say, I'm okay to sit in this quarterback room and be a backup. Like, dude, being in Denver, I've said this before, between myself, Tim, and Kyle Orton, like, every one of us wanted to play. And we were all so different personality-wise and everything else. And so it was tough to then get along. You spent hours in there together. And that's just, you want to have it be, it's why you see a guy like Chase Daniel, who's got, what, 5 starts in his career? It's why you see him keep surviving. Dan Orlovsky, keep surviving. Like, those guys work because they're not going to threaten the starter. They're going to be a good guy. They're going to help their teammates. And not saying that Cam and these other guys won't, but, you know, their whole focus is on them playing, not, you know, trying to help someone else play.
Cam is not going somewhere to be a mentor for a younger player. Like, that ain't what he's doing. I think he'd just as soon go and, like, hang out in Atlanta and not play football than to do that. And I think you're right with Foles. I mean, that setup with the Bears is actually pretty good for that. The one interesting potential backup would be Jameis Winston. And you wouldn't think of Jameis Winston as a backup, but you know who did? Bruce Arians, speaking to our pals Tiki and Tierney last week. Let's give it a listen.
I think for him, it's to get into somewhere as a backup right now. It looks like all the starting jobs are done.
Yeah.
Get in somewhere where he can sit, learn a system, maybe a year for an older person and take over. Or get in competition with a younger guy. And because he is a super talented and a super hardworking guy.
So he said that. He said, go be a backup for now. Sit and learn the system. And the other thing that he said, too, and we didn't have the sound in there, but Bruce Arians mentioned that they had obviously Tom Brady was their, you know, their reason. And he said, and if we didn't get Tom, we were going to go get Teddy Bridgewater. And then Jameis was plan C. Like, right. That's a – He also said the regression in the last two ball games with the interceptions, it was disheartening because he made progress, then he regressed. I mean, like, Arians didn't hold back. He blew up James' spot pretty bad.
No, and then that's what you love about BA is he's always going to be honest with you about, you know, what he thinks, what he's feeling. But, and I've said this to you before, I don't know if I said it on the Pick Six podcast, but the best thing that Jameis could do at this point, and this goes back to your initial question, is like, why is there not a market for him? Because he was thrusted into play. And look, no matter what people think, there's no substitute for real game experience, but that doesn't mean that that real game experience is going to benefit you in the long run. Like, there are some scarring experiences. There are some times where it's going to look bad. It's part of your resume, right? Like, when you look at your entire body of work and your tape, that's your resume. And so if you go in early on, you make some mistakes, you struggle, that's going to be the perception of you is that, oh, you didn't come in and light the world on fire like Baker Mayfield did or anyone else did as a rookie and became this, you know, Kyler Murray last year. Like, that's going to be the perception. And that kind of carries on with you the longer you go, unless you take some huge stride like Mahomes and you win the MVP early in your career, or Lamar Jackson and win the MVP early in your career. So it's hard because that's just not normal to do that. And I think the problem is that now, let's say he goes and sits behind Drew Brees for 2 years and Sean Payton gets his hands on him. You know, could he become more improved than a better player when it's all said and done? Or could that be the best spot for him? I think so. Like, if I was Jameis, I think I would take less money and I'd go to the Saints on a 3-year deal if I could to be the backup and gladly sit behind Drew Brees for the next 2 years and then hope to be the guy when he's done or if he gets hurt and turn things around like Teddy Bridgewater did in coupling that into an opportunity. So, that could be the experience there, but like being a backup to Drew Brees, a future Hall of Famer, is the probably only scenario that would work. And I still don't think Cam Newton is willing to do something like that. I think he wants a legitimate shot to start, and he's willing to maybe wait and be patient before he signs somewhere.
All right. It's not just the quarterbacks out there. There's another superstar free agent lurking around the corner. I don't know where I was going to say he was lurking. But Jadeveon Clowney is lurking, and you don't want to be lurked on by Clowney. We'll tell you where he might land coming up after this break.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, so Clowney, again, like Cam Newton, a guy with an injury history, a guy who's a free agent, a guy who's not had a market. And Jonathan Jones pointed out on this podcast, too, a few weeks ago. I like to remind people of this, but Jameis Winston had a meniscus surgery in February. Like, that's not, I mean, that's, I mean, I know that's like a kind of routine situation. Like, you feel good about him coming back from it, but that is still a thing, right? I mean, like, you know, and for Clowney, microfracture surgery in the past, multiple injuries last year. Are you surprised he hadn't had a market in free agency, given that he plays, you know, he's a pass rusher and he's young and he's a former first round pick with a high profile?
No, I mean, you know, everyone's going to go back to that first round grade, and that's one of the reasons why you're intrigued, but the injury history is worrisome. Last year on tape, he just wasn't a good scheme fit for Seattle. There wasn't a ton of production in the passing game. Like, I think that's unfortunately the issue. You could be a complete player, but if you're not impacting games with your pass rush, it's just, you're not going to be highly sought after, especially for the price that he's supposed to have been asking for, or if he wants to be at one of the tops of the market. So that's one of my concerns, I think. And then more so than that, you know, durability is a big question mark for me with him. Like, you know, can he be the player they need him to be for all 16 games? I feel like it's hard to see him do that year in and year out. So I think at this point in time in free agency, it usually comes down to two things. Teams are looking at you and they're saying your asking price is too high for your services. And so maybe you'd be better off just signing a 1-year deal, whether that's with Seattle or anyone else, and proving it, and then trying to look at free agency next season. Or, you know, it's a product of teams being really concerned about your medical grades and saying we could find someone who probably could provide just as much pressure in the draft this year and is going to come cheaper and is going to probably be more durable throughout the course of their career, given how young you are, but your body's not that young, at least as far as how banged up it is.
You know what, Brady? You know what you find out really fast in this, in these corona lockdowns? Just how much your spouse respects your job.
100%.
And the answer in some cases is not very much. I'm not going to speak to my, you know, personal situation. I'll just say hypothetically.
Not like AK listens to the podcast, does she?
She might start now just to hear what I said.
side point. The Zoom conferences and everything that people are doing now, right? It's become like the in fad thing, in vogue thing. So my daughter, she's in pre-K 3, mind you. They tried to do that today. So it was supposed to be for a half an hour with their teacher to go over like whatever basic thing they're going to do. And then the parents work with the kids later on in the day. So the first half an hour is devoted to essentially trying to get a grasp of all of it for the kids because they haven't seen each other. They're all excited. They're all seeing different people on the screen. So the entire first half an hour was like trying to herd cats. It was like trying to get them all to kind of be quiet. The parents are there. They're trying to kind of partake and muting the phones. But everyone's just saying hi to each other. They're like, hi, miss you. Hi, ha, ha, ha. Like, it was just an absolute disaster. So I can only – like, I actually think for teachers, as much as, you know, they're probably like, yeah, it's not that bad having some time off even though you're quarantined – part of them that have to do these video teaching sessions are probably like, this is an absolute nightmare. Like, I'd rather be in a classroom with these kids instead of doing these Zoom sessions, if you will.
Yeah. Robbie had, I think it was AK described it as three conference calls last Tuesday or something like that. It's ridiculous. So other free agents very quickly. We mentioned Jameis Winston. Logan Ryan sort of sneaking out there. Surprised. Yeah, he's young. Pretty good player.
Yeah, he's relatively young.
Like 29. I guess he's not that young.
I think if you're looking at teams that could really use him, I know we have listed as like the Cowboys, Giants, Bears, all could use him. Like the Cowboys are interesting because if you look at Lewis, Chidobe Awuzie, they just signed back Anthony Brown. Like, I think they kind of feel good with where they're at. Like, they might make that move in the draft. We don't know what's going to happen, but I might take them off the list. Like, the Giants and Bears seem to be teams that would maybe make some more sense. To me, as far as, you know, teams that could use them more so than the Cowboys, depending on how, again, the Cowboys feel about their own roster and being able to view that.
Jason Peters, too old to come back for another team. Feels like if the Eagles aren't going to bring him back, then who? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they lost Big V in free agency, the Lions.
They drafted him to essentially replace
Andre Dillard,
Andre Dillard. So I don't think he's going back there. It doesn't make as much sense. We've got the Titans, Seahawks, and Chiefs as potential options. Look, I don't know why the Chiefs aren't focused on trying to rebuild their offensive line. Like, I would spend all my time focused on that and then maybe cornerback, because those are the two things that I just think they need to be able to do throughout the course of the year. Put up a bunch of points, keep Mahomes healthy. That's how you do that. And then their secondary's got to be able to actually cover and get some turnovers and be able to stop teams who are going to be playing from behind from coming back in games. And so, like, those would be the two positions that I'd be most focused on this offseason.
Mm. I can get behind that as well. And, man, it is kind of thinning out. Demarius Randall on the list of best available. It's a weird free agent class because it was like a big headline free agency class. But, like, once you got off the quarterbacks and then with Clowney, like, I mean, it wasn't that – incredible a crop of guys, I don't think.
No, I was going to say, I think besides the quarterback talk, it kind of, you're looking at teams being able to, one, utilize the franchise tag this year, which we thought they were going to do just with the cap going up, a new CBA. You'd only be able to utilize one, you know, anyway, you wouldn't have the transition tag. But either way, like, you kind of anticipated teams using the tag more. So I think maybe that eliminated some of those guys hitting the market. But, yeah, I think more so than ever, like, I don't know. I think you're going to start seeing teams trying to hold on to guys they really value and utilizing the franchise tag for a year, just with the cap if it continues to keep going up. And then you're going to see, you know, teams not really wanting to spend, you know, quite as much on some of these other guys that kind of make their way to free agency. I think they're going to be viewed a little bit as used goods.
Yeah. And the thing too with now, with the way that the cap has spiked and the teams have gotten much smarter about how they build out, contracts that they give to players, it feels like if you have a guy who, you're looking at it might be a potential free agent, he's probably just going to get traded.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like if these guys have two dummy years left on their deals. Teams aren't going to cut them. Teams don't want to take these, you know, some of these teams don't mind holding on to guys and taking the cap hit as opposed to taking a huge dead cap hit because they know the body can at least get them something in return and or, you know, put them on the field and get something out of them. Like Robert Quinn, last year, 10 years before, the Dolphins would have just cut him and instead they traded him to the Cowboys for a 6-round pick.
Right. And like people look at that as like, oh, it's only a 6-round pick, but it's like, well, it's something, and it becomes something else too in part of a package deal to move around, or maybe it becomes, you know, who knows, right? In the 6th.
You just swear?
I think I almost did, and I kind of caught myself midway through.
All right, let's. We haven't talked to you in a while, so let's get just one team that has gone way up in your eyes. Who you nodding at? Port?
Port's here.
Hey, Port. Tell them to come in and say what's up.
Product that we haven't got sponsored for the show, but we should. It's called Zip Fizz. Incredible energy drink. It's healthy. It's good. It's got about a cup of coffee as far as caffeine, but then it's got a ton of B12. And so it's healthy. It's good for you.
Did you just read a promo on the podcast?
No, that's just my overall opinion of it because I pitched to a lot of people.
So let's get one team that sort of shot up in your eyes in terms of how you think their off season's gone and one team that's fallen, like a winner and a loser, if you will.
I mean, look, there's been teams that haven't done anything, right? Has New England done anything?
But see, you have like New England and Pittsburgh who haven't done a whole lot, but I don't typically tend to look at them as losers because they just haven't been active. Like to me, I would say a big winner is your boy Cliff Kingsbury.
In Arizona. Here's the thing is like, okay. So I don't know if we've talked since that trade.
We have not.
Like there's some things when Pete and I were talking about this, like some concerns about Hopkins, like, all right, his yards per reception went down last year. He's not separating quite the same. Like, does that stuff start to matter? I don't know. Maybe Bill O'Brien and maybe the Texans were able to see the decline of Hopkins before everyone else.
That would be impressive.
Well, that, and then maybe there was some stuff he was doing off the field that they saw too that were issues. Like, again, we thought the Steelers dealing Antonio Brown to the Raiders for a third and a fifth was the dumbest thing in the world. Like, everyone hammered the Steelers for it. Yep. They're like, oh, look at the position they put themselves in. After the helmet fiasco and everything else, Who had the last laugh?
The Steelers got Deontay Johnson out of it. Like they won. Yeah.
They won that without a doubt. And so for them to be able to get back in return, what, a second and fourth in David Johnson, like eliminate David Johnson for a second, unless he provides any value. Like maybe they get a second and fourth and maybe they say, look, this is like as good as we were maybe going to get for him. Like as much as you want to try to say, look, Hopkins has been more productive than Diggs. Diggs is younger. Like Diggs is faster. Diggs has been able to create more separation. Maybe that offer just wasn't there. Like, I think we tend to view this in a vacuum where we're like, oh, easily the Cardinals won. I don't know. Let's kind of wait and see how this goes.
I do keep wondering about it. I'm like, is there a path in which we look at this back and we're like, okay, you know what? Mea culpa, Bill O'Brien, you nailed that one. Like, it's hard to find. I would have rather trade DeAndre Hopkins and get like two firsts for him rather than.
Do we even know that was out there? Like,
no.
And we're assuming that, like, oh, okay, so he didn't call the Bills. Like, look, I can promise you this for the people I know within the Bills organization. There's a reason why they love John Brown. There's a reason why they loved Robert Foster out of Alabama, who was under everyone's radar. You know what? Want to know what they loved about him?
They're fast.
Speed and separation. When I went and called a game for them 2 years ago, or was it this past season? No, I think it was 2 years ago. We were talking about what they look for to pair with Josh Allen. They said, all we care about is guys who can separate. That's what we want. That's where the game's going to. So it's no surprise that they would be more aggressive in going after Diggs because he fits that model. Zay Jones didn't necessarily fit it, and that's why he's not there anymore. And I don't know that Hopkins did either. So I just think we need to not like overreact to it right now because who knows what that second and fourth turn into, and then who knows what the Texans are able to do.
Okay. What about did you give a winner?
The Browns, I think, again, I hate saying that because last year everyone would have said the same thing.
5 years in a row.
Right. I mean, and we can make that every year, but to get Conklin, to be able to get Hooper, I think will be a more reliable option too. What was the other piece that they ended up adding? Their name escapes me at the time.
In free agency?
Yeah, they got Conklin. They got Hooper. I think they got a legitimate fullback.
Andy Janovich.
Yeah, Janovich. Like,
it was Carl Joseph probably.
And then Joseph as well. So like those three pieces, like, look, say what you want about Joseph. I loved him coming out of West Virginia. I don't know that he ever fit the scheme there with the Raiders. And I think he could really fit into what they want to do offensively moving forward. But I liked all those pieces. Like, Conklin's a good get. They needed a fullback. Those guys are hard to find. It's only going to help take pressure off of Baker Mayfield and get in some easy completions or help out the run game. Like, I like what they've done. And they're a team that fits into it. The Bengals are a team that has spent a little bit, I think, made some decent moves.
I didn't like that Trey Wayne's contract, though.
You know, I look at it, though, and I feel like it looks like they can get out of it after 2 years. And the only thing I'd say in the defense of the Bengals are they typically are able to identify cornerbacks pretty well.
Have they been that good at it since Mike Zimmer left, though? I don't feel like they have.
But that's
have
a question of, like, scheme, though, right? Like, yeah. Like, I would look at last year's defensive scheme and be like, all right, like, what were they doing? Like, maybe there's some things you need to revisit there from a coaching standpoint. But, I mean, look, Trey Kirkpatrick's turned out of what you thought. Like, you could do it going down the lines, whether it was Leon Hall, like, back when they had taken him. I know I'm dating myself, but I'm just saying, like, through the years, like, William Jackson, I think he's capable enough. Like, you could go through the years of draft picks they've had in the first round at cornerback or other picks. They've all been pretty good. So I don't know. Like, that's what I'm kind of curious to see, if Trey Wayne's can fit into what they want to do with him moving forward.
Yeah. And it can end up being like a 2-year, $31 million contract. I mean, look, if he's really good, then great. Yeah. So it's not a huge, crazy long deal. And if he's good, he's good. And, you know, we'll look stupid. I just thought it was a lot of money that they paid for him. If like Bill Belichick had done it, you'd be like, well, he knows something about Trey Wayne's. We don't, but the Bengals do it. And you're like, yeah, like, who knows if.
Right.
All right. What about a loser? Oh, by the way, Deshaun Watson doing cryptic tweets. I keep forgetting what we've mentioned on the show and what we mentioned. We do a Pick Six podcast show. It's going to, Tuesday, starting today. Jeez Louise, Will. Starting today at 4 p.m., our HQ show will change. We'll go from 8 p.m. to 4 p.m. So if you listen to the show and you want to tune into that, alter your plans and your schedule. Deshaun Watson, we mentioned on that show previously last week, he had a bunch of cryptic tweets, like Drake lyrics, that make it sound like he would want to leave Houston. Do you buy or sell the idea that he wants out now that Hopkins is gone?
Well, I think any quarterback who doesn't feel like they're either being protected or supplied with what they need out around them would want to look for greener pastures. This isn't necessarily a contract dispute. I just think this comes down to a guy who was able to win a national championship at Clemson and was put in a position where he had a lot of talent out around him. So, I think he's looking for that same opportunity now. And moving on from Hopkins, my initial reaction was, how does this make this team any better or closer to winning a Super Bowl? And, you know, I think the reasonable response is it probably doesn't, especially when that's your number one wide receiver. But, you know, where you've gotten to at this point, I do feel like they've gotten to a wall. Like, I don't know how you view them, but in my mind, the defense isn't what it was 3 or 4 years ago. And I think offensively, if you want to put yourself into the conversation of being this dynamic, high-scoring, high-powered offense, you know, you'd rather try to buy in on some players that can help you become that. I don't know if David Johnson does that or what you pick in the second or fourth round is going to be that. But, again, I think you're looking for how you can kind of not necessarily rebuild but reload and then make a better run at it or give yourself a better chance. And maybe that's the logic behind what Bill O'Brien's doing right now.
Okay, fair enough. What about one loser from the offseason?
I think we tend to kind of look at the teams that haven't been as active and yeah. I look that way.
That's the problem with free agencies. You're like the Dolphins and Browns signed everybody. They're winners. The Steelers and the Patriots haven't signed anybody. They're losers. And then 6 months from now, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, I guess I look at what the Dolphins have done, and I think, you know, they've made a lot of moves, and they've brought in guys, and probably them and like the Lions, like some of the moves that they've made, I think both fit what Patricia want and Brian Flores want. But, I mean, man, if you don't see that jump or more success from either one of them, I mean, in the case of Patricia and Bob Quinn, they're probably gone.
Yeah.
And we're looking at Brian Flores, like you then start to look at, all right, is he falling in line with the rest of the Bill Belichick disciples where it doesn't really work? And then look, if Bill Belichick has a bad year, let's say they go 6-10 or 7-9 and they don't win the AFC East. You don't think that people aren't going to start saying, maybe the reason for all that success had more to do with Tom Brady than it was the genius of what Bill Belichick was doing. Like there's going to be those people out there that say that, and that's going to reflect poorly on the Brian Flores and the Matt Patricias and everyone else.
Little trickle down.
Without a doubt. And so, like, I look at, like, Flowers. Like, has he been better at guard than tackle? Of course. Is that what that team needs to overcome and have a better offensive line? We'll see. You look at some of the other moves they've made, signing Byron Jones, that contract. They don't have the two highest paid cornerbacks in the game. And look, Byron Jones might not even play cornerback. He might have ended up playing like a hybrid safety position.
Yeah.
You know, how much is that really going to get them? Like, I still think they need help rushing off the edge. They still need some help at other spots too. So, you know,
I think there's a presumption that the Dolphins are going to like make a leap to 500 automatically.
Right.
And it's like, if they go back to two or three wins, people are going to be like, whoa, the Belichick point is great too. Like, I really can't, like, I'm not saying that I think this, but like, if Bill Belichick misses the playoffs, there will be a think piece next offseason from someone that's like, how many Super Bowls would Belichick have really won if he never got Tom Brady?
Well, especially if Tom Brady goes to Tampa and then they're playing the NFC Championship game or you know, the Super Bowl. I mean, can you imagine Tom Brady goes to Tampa? Not only is the first quarterback to ever or first team to ever play in their own stadium for a Super Bowl and win it. Like, imagine that. Like, if he is able to accomplish all of that, given what he's already done. Like, people say sometimes arguably the greatest of all time now. No. He is the greatest of all time. There is no argument. That would be like just putting him so far and ahead away of everyone else, just because it's so hard to be able to win another Super Bowl with another team. I mean, you can even ask, you know, Peyton Manning being able to win in Indy and Denver and just how difficult that probably was for him after they got there the first time and got blown out and realizing how far they really were away of being able to challenge a team like Seattle that year.
And in fact, Peyton, you know, it's that second Super Bowl for a quarterback like Peyton with a different team is so important that like people don't even, I mean, we're not even 5 years removed from it. People don't even mention that Manning was like a shell of himself for that almost that entire season.
Right. Well, I mean, look, he got replaced by Osweiler. I mean, look, I know there's an injury involved.
Yeah, bench for Osweiler. Yeah. Peyton Manning bench for Brock Osweiler. Say it out loud.
Like it happened. Like, and he was kept off the field probably longer, right? There's those stories of him like flicking off the security camera when he'd go over those throwing sessions and all that, basically saying like F you to John Elway, like I'm ready, like put me back in. And they even held off on that until what, week 17, I believe, versus the Chargers in their place. Then he came in and essentially made some good run checks to help them win that game. Like, and when you go back to that year and really look back at it, you know, again, he helped them, but in large part that defense was a big piece of why they won it.
That's right. All right, coming up on Wednesday, we're going to have a Tom Brady episode in which we break down Tom Brady's best moments and interviews with two former XFL players, or I guess PJ Walker now, a Carolina Panthers player, and Jordan Te'amu. Look at us doing actual football journalism by interviewing actual NFL players who used to be in the XFL. Very exciting stuff. Brady Quinn, thank you for all of your time today. I know that you – actually, you know what? I'm keeping you away from your family, so you're welcome.
No, I still have to do more work here. So
oh, you do?
My day is not done. Hey, here's what my wish is for you. I hope you go crack a toughie or two, all right? And you go have a good rest of the day. You try to enjoy it. You don't worry about any of this other stuff going on out there, Will, all right? And same to everyone else out there listening.
Your grace under pressure is truly magnanimous.
Well,
I'm not a big fan of you, grace usually, but your grace.
You could call me saving grace, if you will. And that may be, there may be more to that saving grace than people. Yes.
They may call me killed by grace. All right, Brady. I'll see you, buddy.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.